Hello there, all you creeps. If you're one of the many new listeners, or even if you're someone who's been around and has chosen not to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, do it now, or I will forever haunt you in your home. That basically just means I will provide you with the best cuddling that you've ever experienced, and I'll probably do your dishes, honestly. You can also help support us all by giving us a 5-star rating on Spotify and by following us on our social media at The Fright Crew on Insta and The Fright Crew Pod on TikTok. I also just want to tell you guys how much we adore and appreciate all of your continued support, and we thank you from the bottom of our decrepit little hearts. Now, roll the intro.
Welcome to The Fright Crew.
What's spooky, you creeps? I'm your guy who is yet again wearing a power suit, complaining about all the little bad things in my head, Jensen Harper.
And I am just an innocent child doing my arts and crafts in school when all of a sudden I see my teacher get fucking wrecked by these creatures with no belly buttons. Courtney.
And I'm Matthew.
That's Matthew, the homie. Yeah.
And we love that for you.
Yes, we do. You are one of the best characters in the film.
I was gonna go with the kid too that saw the teacher. I didn't know she was gonna do that.
there's many children in that classroom that saw it, so we both could be in that same classroom. Okay,
I got notes on that too. I'm also part of it.
Yeah, just the fact that like he's like, I'm gonna cover her face with the paper, and that's gonna like help all these kids get through this moment. I was like,
they're just gonna need therapy for the rest of their lives, but it's
for
fine.
Real. Yeah. I just watched my teacher get slaughtered in front of my eyes. Yes. Oh my god, dude. So yes,
that's just a normal Tuesday at Well.
Pretty much, dude.
What are you gonna do?
Yeah. But who are we, Courtney?
We are the Fright Crew.
Yes.
We're still kicking.
Still kicking strong out of the womb. Hell yeah. Right outside of the womb. And yeah, I got my friend Matt on. We worked together. It was love at first sight kind of vibes. You know the drill, Matt.
Oh. I mean,
yeah. Definitely was. I think I proposed, actually.
Yeah, it was crazy. It was pretty wild. Yeah. And yeah, he's definitely resident spooky boy as well. And we have a good time every time we work together. It's nothing gets done, right?
No, it doesn't.
We literally, dude, I think, Courtney, I think I told you a while back, dude. We had an appointment together. We then promptly finished the appointment, and he said, do you want to go see a movie with me? And I said, yeah. So on
yeah
the clock,
what did you guys see?
Asteroid City.
Okay. I remember that story. Mm-hmm. That's very wholesome.
It is, and it was a good time.
It's like, yeah, the friendships you make at work are the ones that are the strongest, I feel, because my yeah best friends still to this day are people that I met at work.
Right, for sure. And yeah, welcome company, dude. You've known about the podcast since we met and shit too, so that is why you are on, and you are going to be on in the future every episode. Okay, Matt? No. He's like, wait, what?
He's stuck with us forever.
Dang it.
And we're all gonna have to move in together eventually. Quit our jobs and be full-time podcasters.
Yeah, exactly, dude. No more auditing for you, Matt. We are tonight, we're starting a new theme, and it's pretty exciting. So Courtney, I'd say 2 to 3 themes ago, whatever you want to call it, we did under your supervision David Lynch month.
Oh, we did. Yeah,
and it was pretty
how
exciting.
Did I forget about that already?
Right. One of your favorites.
So much. Yes.
And when you picked that, I was like, I love Cronenberg, David Cronenberg. And
we love our Davids.
We love our Davids around here. David,
if our baby boys.
Yeah, if we have any David listeners, just hit us up and I'll Venmo you or whatever. But David Cronenberg, man, I mean, I kind of did that thing last year, like I said I was going to do, which is because before that, I had only really seen The Fly, like when I was like 20 or something, you know? And before that, I hadn't really seen any of his other films, iconic or not. And so I think it was last year or the year before, I was like, you know what? I'm going to make an effort to watch majority of his filmography. And I definitely had a really interesting time with it. Obviously Cronenberg is, if you, I feel like
you either love him or you hate him, possibly. Is that, can we kind of agree on
mm-hmm.
it? Okay.
Yeah.
You're either grossed out by him or you love him, yeah.
Exactly, dude. Yeah, it's one or the other. And then what's funny about him, like, knowing how far he can go with his direction style, his tamer stuff, such as this movie, The Brood, by the way, which we didn't introduce. The Brood is what we're covering. That's my pick. It's a lot tamer, you know. There's definitely some horrific imagery near the end that we'll get to, but there's also a really dramatic and melodramatic backstory to it, I feel like, personally. So, and I believe, Courtney, I don't know if you remember, but I think it was the first time you and I did it where we did like our 2020 whatever favorites of the year that we discovered. The Brood was on my list that year because I was just like, yeah, I was just like, dude. And then I've been telling you for since then, I was like, you got to watch this. And so I'm glad we're finally here covering it. And I think it's a very interesting film. And this is your first time watching it. And I'm very curious to see how you feel about it. So, which we don't have to get into. Not yet. Actually, give us a little tip of the iceberg. How did, like, roughly, like, are you into it?
I'm down. I'm here for it.
Down for the ground?
I am. Yeah, and I, again, haven't seen a whole ton of his movies. Like, I've seen a few. But when you told me you wanted to do this theme, and I was, like, looking through, I was kind of just, like, randomly picking a movie. I forget the one that I originally wanted to do, and you're like, absolutely not.
One of them, you said Rabid. Rabid at one point, which I haven't seen, but I was like, it's probably not like the one that we should do, if that makes sense. If you haven't seen it, you know.
I'm glad you have the better knowledge of like the good ones, because this was a good one. I liked it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had a good time.
Okay, cool. I'm excited to hear rating and all that stuff. What about you, Matt? I mean, I know you jumped on this when I texted you. You were like, dude, totally down for The Brood. So, and you, like you said, rewatched it. So what's your gush on it? Like, how do you feel about this movie?
I did enjoy it a lot. There was just some questions I had here and there. I was like, why is this way? And then like, as you and I were talking, I was like, oh, it's Cronenberg. Like, I think I was just looking for more explanation that was needed, you know, like in The Fly, you're like, oh, this happened because of this. And like in Dead Zone, this happened because of this. And I should have just realized it's Cronenberg. Like, you know what you're getting into, you know? But yeah, I thought it was a pretty solid movie. Like, the noise those creatures make is going to like stay in my head for a while. But
yeah, big time. It's kind of gross. Yeah. Like just screaming and screeching. Yeah.
Good times.
Sweet. Well, I think that's gush enough. Let's get into some trivia, which, as you guys know, as for my portion, when it comes to the director, when we did David Lynch month, I kind of broke it into three sections over the period of time that we covered David Lynch. So I'll do the same thing with Cronenberg here. So yeah, it'll just be like his early days. But first, well, I got to announce it. Let's get into the child range. Courtney, let's hear your page of stuff.
My page of stuff.
Your page of stuff.
All right, I am ready. So let's see if I can get through this being able to pronounce everything. Okay. Which we
Canada.
Like.
Yeah.
Yes. So yeah, The Brood is a 1979 Canadian psychological body horror film written and directed by David Cronenberg. It stars Oliver Reed, Samantha Egger, and Art Hindle. So Cronenberg stated that he felt The Brood was the most classic horror film that he's done in terms of structure. He conceived the screenplay in the aftermath of a divorce with his wife, which resulted in a bitter custody battle over their daughter, which makes sense once you watch this movie. During his divorce, Cronenberg became aware of the drama Kramer versus Kramer, which was also released in 1979, and was disillusioned by the optimistic depiction of a familial breakdown after a couple separation. And in response, he began writing the screenplay for The Brood, aspiring to depict the strife between a divorced couple battling over their child.
Hmm. Okay.
In a very interesting way.
Yeah, no shit, man.
Yeah, that's what is so fascinating with like directors and filmmakers and stuff on how they perceive certain things.
Yeah, and like, process what they can, it.
yeah, create out of it.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
So the film was shot in Toronto from November 14th to December 21st of 1978. It had a budget of $1.4 million, which is equivalent to $5.4 million as of 2021, with $200,000 of it coming from the Canadian Film Development Corporation. The Court Knight Center for Conservation just north of Toronto was used as a location of the SOMAFRE Institute. An additional photography was done in Mississauga. I don't know. Okay. It's something. It's a word. So Egger recalled the production crew being very small and only had around 7 crew members in total while she was filming her sequences. Many of them academics and PhDs standing there holding lights. Her scenes were shot over a period of 3 days to portray the brood of children. Cronenberg cast a group of child gymnasts from Toronto.
Okay. Whoa. So wait, they're actually kids?
Yeah. They probably had like some creepy little like
rubber prosthetic. Yeah. Yeah.
Like, yeah.
No, I mean, I get that. I thought it was like little people, honestly.
Oh. Yeah.
On the cast, there's like one, it says the guy was, says creature, but it was a little fella.
Okay. Okay. So maybe there's some
weird.
For yeah. Like the and more like intensive scenes, too. But like children for other stuff. I could see.
Yeah. That.
Interesting.
The more you know.
Yeah.
So, right. This was the first film scored by composer Howard Shore. Shore's work consists in a composition for chamber orchestra, strongly reminiscent of the second Viennese schools, Arnold Schoenberg, Albenberg, and Anton Webern. The technically difficult score by Shore is performed by professional players, and it is the first Cronenberg film to have an original soundtrack. What? Is that a shocking discovery for you?
Yeah, that's crazy, man. Yeah. That's crazy.
Pretty cool, though. I like that. So Shore has written the music for most of Cronenberg's subsequent films.
I see. I was like, I feel like I've heard the name. Matt, you're a musician. Have you heard of Howard Shore?
I think I have heard him. Did he do The Fly also? That would be about the only place.
That's what I'm wondering.
I would have heard of him.
I'll look it up while you continue, Courtney.
Okay. So The Brood had cuts demanding for an R rating for its theatrical release in the United States. Egger conceived the idea of licking the new fetuses that her character has spawned. She said, I just thought that when cats have their kittens or dogs have puppies, and I think at that time I had about 8 dogs, they lick them as soon as they're born.
Yum. Fetus.
I mean, don't we all do that?
Yeah, fetus juice is what I drink in the morning.
Oh, yeah. Second I spawn my firstborn, I will be licking it out of the womb. However, when this climactic scene was censored, Cronenberg responded, I had a long and loving close-up of Samantha licking the fetus. When the censors, those animals, cut it out, the result was that a lot of people thought she was eating her baby. Oh. That's much worse than I was suggesting.
Okay, okay.
So The Brood was released.
That scene caught me off guard, honestly. Like, I just wasn't ready
for it. It kind of did for me, too. Yeah. Yep. I'm like, well, leave it to Jensen. To have this be one of his favorite films makes sense as soon as that scene popped up.
Yeah. Yeah.
So The Brood was released as Chromosome 3 in France and La Clinique de la Terreur. Sorry. In Quebec, the film was distributed by New World Pictures and opened in the United States on May 25th of 1979, in Canada on June 1st, in France on October 10th, and in the United Kingdom on March 13th of 1980. The French dub was released in Montreal March 14th of 1980, and after its screenings in Toronto and Chicago, The Brood grossed $685,000 over only a period of 10 days between two cities. And by 1981, the film had grossed over $5 million. Cronenberg was able to purchase a home using his earnings from the film. Love that for him.
Yeah.
The film was released on DVD in its original uncensored version by Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer on August 26th of 2003. Anchor Bay Entertainment released a film on DVD in the United Kingdom in 2005. For ratings, we have an 81% on Rotten Tomatoes. We have a 6.8 out of 10 on IMDb and a 3.6 out of 5 on Letterboxd.
Letterboxd. I had it pulled up for you, but that's okay, dude.
Did you?
Sometimes you throw it at me, right, man.
I know.
You keep me on my toes for sure.
I wanted to add a little razzle dazzle to the day.
Yeah.
Today's episode.
And yes, for anyone, Matt included, wondering, Howard Shore has gone on to do quite a few awesome things. Yes, The Fly included. We got Lord of the Rings, like Fellowship of the Ring, The Aviator, like some really dope shit, dude. So Spotlight, The Hobbit.
Yeah.
So he's also worked with one of my favorite boys too. So I love that. Peter Jackie boy. Peter Jackson. Yep. Sick. I love that dude.
Peter Jackson, huh? What movies does he do?
I don't know.
I'm just kidding. I was getting ready for you to start screaming at me.
Wait, I don't remember him. Who's he?
He did Biodome, right?
Oh.
Did he?
No.
Oh, okay. I was like, I don't really know Biodome, and I would expect him. He is a comedic boy. So that's all you got, Courtney?
That's all I got.
Do people call you Court?
Some do. It really depends. Like, everybody at work calls me like Court, which I don't know where that started.
Yeah.
Which is fine. But yeah, like, few people do. It's usually people that, like, I've known for a long time.
She's like, so not you. No, I'm kidding. I don't know why I just started today.
If you would like to call me that, you are more than welcome to. You have a
I don't know why
I
just now started.
I don't know either. Yeah, I'm going to call you Jens.
That is my, it's literally the same thing. My family and like very, very close people call me
Jens. And Court.
Jensen Court. Yeah, that's, dude, next intro next week. That's what I'm Jensen.
We should. I'm Court.
I love that.
We've shortened our names.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so like I said earlier, I'm going to do just hit David Cronenberg's early years trivia deep dive. So David Cronenberg was born on March 15th, 1943 in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. So Canadian boy, as we already know. His mother, Esther, was a musician, and his father, Milton, was himself a writer and editor. Growing up, his family was considered, according to him at least, a middle-class progressive Jewish family. And his father was actually born in Baltimore, Maryland, while his mother was born in Toronto. And all four of his grandparents were of Jewish descent from Lithuania. Love that. David's father wrote some short stories for True Detective, while he also wrote for a column in the Toronto Telegram for close to 30 years of his life. At a young age, David's father would introduce him to a wide variety of films, such as The Seventh Seal, all while introducing him to a bunch of different types of books that were laying around the house. But David always claims that while he was young, he was personally more intrigued with Western and pirate films, of which he loved movies with Burt Lancaster in them. David also was an avid reader at quite an early age, and he thoroughly enjoyed reading a couple different science fiction magazines, such as the Magazine of Fantasy and Science Fiction, Galaxy, and Astounding. This is where he learned of writers and authors such as Ray Bradbury and Isaac Asimov. But his most profound influence was that of Philip K. Dick, but he didn't discover him until later on in his life. David also loved comic books as well. Some of his favorites were that of Tarzan, Little Lulu, Uncle Scrooge, Black Hawk, Plastic Man, Superman, and the original version of Captain Marvel, put out by Fawcett Comics. Now it's known as Shazam. Today, David feels that superhero films are too artistically limited, but he does still love his Captain Marvel and Shazam movies. He does feel that these characters have been neglected, like, today. But, you know, I don't know when that was released, because I feel like we just got two new Shazam movies and maybe a new Captain Marvel movie, I think. I don't know. I don't keep up with that shit. I think so. Yeah. In the same vein of comics, he also read horror comics at the time, too. Horror comics put out by EC Comics. In a quote, he considered them scary and bizarre and violent and nasty. The ones your mother didn't want you to have. Some films that David feels influenced his work later on in his life that he had seen when he was younger include films such as Vampyr, War of the Worlds, Freaks, Creature from the Black Lagoon, Alphaville, Performance, and Duel. even some earlier Disney cartoons like Bambi and Dumbo have influenced him. He considered these films terrifying in ways as well. David claims that his first ever important film to him that he had seen was Bambi. He felt that the scene where Bambi's mother was shot and killed was especially profound. At one point, he tried to do a screening of Bambi at a museum exhibit, but Disney didn't allow him to do so. How dare them? As for school, David attended Dewson Street Public School, and then he moved on to Kent Senior School. After that, he enrolled at the University of Toronto for Honor Science in 1963. But he later on changed the, what he was studying to Honors English Language and Literature only like a year later. He graduated from college in 1967 at the top of his class with a General Bachelor of Arts. It wasn't until he saw his college friend David Sector's film called Winter Kept Us Warm from 1966 that he finally became interested in making film himself. He started to rent film cameras and began making his own films finally. His first two short films that he made were Transfer and From the Drain, with just a few hundred dollars each as the budgets. After he made the film Stereo in 1969 for a very small budget of $8,500, he had finally decided that he didn't want to continue to study for his master's any longer. A bit later, David, alongside friends Ivan Reitman, Bob Fothergill, and Ian Ewing, were inspired by Jonas Mekas, where they formed the Toronto Film Co-op. So that's where we'll stop for now. Next week or next time, we'll talk more about the rest of his film career, the chunk of it, and we'll get right into it. You got any hidden trivia for us, Matt?
I don't have any about Cronenberg. I need to dive deeper into him and embrace the grossness that he brings. But I feel like I see so many films anymore. Even in The Thing, I thought for a while he did the burning scene. I thought that was a Cronenberg creature. I need to dive deeper. I don't think it is.
I don't think so, but that's one of my favorites as well, dude. I got to see that last year on the big screen. They did the 40th or 50th anniversary of it, and it was fucking amazing, dude.
I just been showing it to Mallory. I let her watch the newest one. I was like, okay, so it's the new one, but it's the prequel to the 1980, and then we're going to do, I think 1950 something was OG, The Thing. Yeah. Where it's a semi-Sasquatch looking creature.
Yeah, I've never seen it, but it's The Thing That Fell from Earth, right?
I'm trying to get her into those.
All right. Courtney, you ready for notes?
Yeah, but I do have some news for you. I'm going to be reading a synopsis.
By our boy or you?
From our boy.
From our boy.
Our boy, Nick Reganis. I know, I was talking shit. I said I'd never do it again.
We're good.
I'm a fucking fake. I'm a phony. Fibber.
Okay. I'm a fibber. Blood oath was meant nothing to me.
It meant a lot to me, but sometimes I have a moment of weakness. I'm so sorry.
We trust.
Lanta, thank you. I'll try my best to make it sound original, but I don't speak like he does, you know?
Yeah, this fucking freak.
Yeah, I hate him. I fucking hate him, but I'm going to read it anyway. Okay.
All right. Well, let us get into the
Outside of Just Heart.
Boom. Yes. Right there. Let's hear a Nick Reganis special.
Here it is. So Frank is becoming more and more worried about the eccentric Dr. Hal Ragland's high-handed therapeutic treatment of his troubled ex-wife, Nola, at the remote Soma-Free Institute of Psychoplasmics. After years of research, the controversial therapist has come up with a cutting-edge procedure focusing on the physical manifestations of his patients' symptoms, and mainly their bottled-up rage. However, the hideous purple-black bruises and the nasty scratches on the back of Frank and Nola's shell-shocked little daughter, Candace, are alarming. After those intimate mother and daughter meetings at the Institute, are those intimate mother and daughter meetings at the Institute dangerous for the poor girl, ? And what about the string of unexplained brutal murders in town? In the end, are they somehow connected to Soma Free's obscure practices? That actually wasn't too bad.
I feel like that was pretty accurate. Yeah.
I liked that one, actually. He did a good job on that one. I'll give him a small point.
Mm-hmm. Was that Courtney reading, or was that I thought that was actually him?
We have very similar voices, I've heard.
Yeah. It's just the beard that's the difference, right?
He also wears a fedora, so.
Oh, yeah.
I unfortunately do not own one of those, but next time.
And smokes, like, cigars in his mom's basement. We talked about. Yeah, dude.
A pipe, actually.
But. Yeah, probably, dude. A fucking corncob pipe for sure, that guy. Yeah. All right, well. To begin this section, Matt, as you might or may not know, I'd like to kick it off with a question. And we usually start with the guest. This is a fun one. Don't worry, Courtney. It's not like free. Dude, we had our friend on like, what, 2 weeks ago for The Exorcist or whatever? And it went dark, dude. We got dark on that one. I was like, oh, shit, we're going south.
Yeah, I almost ran for the hills.
Yeah, dude, it was rough. I was like, oh, shit. Okay, we're going serious. All right, so this is more fun. Matt, we'll start with you. If you could give birth to some type of creature to do your personal bidding when you were angry, what kind of creature would it be?
Oh man, give birth. Like, so I got to consider giving the birth of how painful it is. Like, cause so therefore I'm not thinking something small. Cause I have,
I guess so. Or it could just grow like these little children do.
Okay. So it can be on the outside. Okay. Yeah. I didn't think about that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Creature to do my bidding. Oh man. That's a good one. I don't think I would have little deformed girls running around, so I'm not going to pick that. I'm guessing they were girls based on they looked like the little candy.
I think so. That's, yeah.
Give birth to a creature. I seriously love that question. I wish I had a really good answer right now. Because like instantly I was like, okay, what creatures do I love? I was like, a Godzilla. I was like, I don't think I can give birth to a Godzilla.
Like, dude, what about tiny Godzillas, little baby Godzillas? And they just go around little fire jets at everybody.
Okay, that'd be adorable, number one. So mm-hmm. I think I'm going to go with that.
Of course, dude. I wouldn't expect anything other than Godzilla for you. Or some type of, you know, little guy like that, for sure.
Love the creatures. I almost said Black Lagoon, and then I was thinking... Yeah. Maybe like a Cujo. I was like, maybe I'll give birth to like a mean old dog. That's lame. I'm going with Godzilla. Way cooler.
You're licking the dog, dude. You got to lick Godzilla, man, now. Ooh. All right, Courtney, what about you? What kind of creature you spawning?
So immediately my brain went to like a little, like Sam from Trick or Treat.
Oh, dude.
Like a little, yeah, like a little cute little pajama wearing with like a jack-o'-lantern head.
Yeah.
That's yep. What I'm feeling, but smaller because he's kind of big.
I feel that
would hurt. Yeah. So if he was like shrunken, then that's what I'm going for.
That would hurt my external egg sac womb thing going on. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
Hell yeah, dude.
He's larger than a toddler, so we're gonna need someone like the size of like a little like kitten, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. For sure. That'd be dope, dude. Just a bunch of Sams. That's like another remake that they need to make. A Michael Dougherty special of The Brood.
Ooh, yeah.
Just a bunch of Sams. Dope. It is hard to answer the question. I mean, I made it. I even had so much time to think about what you guys were going to say. I mean, I guess, okay, Matt, you kind of, okay, we all picked our favorites. So what is Jensen's favorite? The Xenomorph. It would be tiny little mm-hmm. Xenomorphs running around. They'd be like this big first. Got that pointy tail. Oh, yeah, that'd be sick. Little Xenomorphs running around, fucking your face.
Oh, that's a part of Pornhub I've never seen.
True that, dude. Let's get into some notes, dude. And I did get, if you can hear me, Matt, I got your message that your service is shit. That's okay. Just don't talk. Just shut the fuck up.
No, I'm sorry. I'm trying to get to a good spot here.
Dude, you're good. You're good. I'm going to kick off with some notes, though. So we start the movie off with two dudes where one of them is completely emasculating the other by telling him that he should have been born a girl and all this bullshit. He's calling him weak and all this other stuff, but it's also in front of like a class and he's calling him daddy. Everyone thinks that the doctor is a genius and that he's changing people's lives with his psychosomatic therapy or whatever. So Frank, our main character, sits in on one of these therapy sessions and... Then we're introduced to the daughter, Candace, where Frank notices some marks on her back. Jesus Christ. As he's giving her a bath. And it did get brought back up. So I do wonder, do you guys think, Courtney, you start, where do you think that like the mom was injuring her own or like abusing her own kid?
My mind immediately alluded to that. Yes. So yeah, I think I'm going to say yeah.
Okay. And Matt, do you agree?
I think so.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, that's definitely what it alludes to. And I just think it's more so of like a question in the beginning almost, you know, and it's funny. I'm actually wearing a Possession shirt, but Courtney, I mean, if you remember, there's a lot of parallels to that movie where you do kind of question like, is she abusing her child and like all this stuff. So I think this,
I was going to mention that earlier too.
Yeah. Yeah. So Frank goes back to the building where Dr. Raglan is doing his therapy, and Frank demands that he wants to see his wife, Nola, who's been staying there under Doc Raglan's care. After Frank is denied to see his wife, he leaves, and Doc Raglan tells a person on the phone to set Nola up for another session later that night. He basically goes in and accuses her of harming his child. So I get it. So Frank goes to see like a lawyer or something like that, and he says that he wants to set him up to make certain that people know that Raglan is a fraud.
There's so many things in the beginning. Like, they took her there because of some sort of reason. Like, did the husband know she could do this? Is this like a new thing? She's able to give birth on the outside? Like,
yeah, no, that's a good question. Like,
that's why I married her.
That's right, what I was attracted to. I definitely think the reveal in the end with Dr. Raglan, where he tells him what's going on, and that the reveal of Dr. Raglan actually not exactly being a bad intentioned person. Can we agree on that?
Did he pretend like he didn't know that she had the capability, like, or that she was unaware that whenever she got mad at someone, that those creatures would go and kill them? I don't know if I believe him. Like,
I think he knew what was going on. I think it's more so just like he wanted to. That's such a good question, you know? Like, maybe I think it was more so he wanted to be the one in control of it, if that makes sense. Like, he wanted, he wanted to be the one to like be in control of her emotions so that they could almost do his bidding instead, but fed off of her.
Do you think that's why he got rid of all the other patients at the facility?
I think so. Maybe, and maybe that brings up the question of like, there's so many of these children, because every time something like failed, he tried to make more, possibly, or like, I don't know. And
that's another question I have. Is she just like asexually pumping those things out, or like, does there need to be a donor? Like, what's up?
Right. Right. No, it's a solid question. I mean, typical Cronenberg, where you have all these questions, and, you know, typically we try not to like reveal exactly in the beginning of the discussion what happens in the end, but either you've seen this movie or we're already ruining it for you anyway. So yeah, essentially Nola can give birth to these little creatures outside of her body in this little egg sac thing, womb. And they essentially, every time she gets upset, they do her bidding, which is kill people that she's frustrated with. So it's, yeah, dude, there's a lot of questions. I get it. Typical Cronenberg, where some of those might not be answered, right?
Forever. Yeah.
Yeah. So Frank decides he wants Nola's mother to watch Candace so that he can focus on getting Nola better care and all that jazz. And while she's there, one of our little Oompa Loompa looking kids comes and kills the shit out of Grandma with a hammer.
Now, be honest, whenever you first watched it first time, and like she's sitting there, she's talking to the girl in the room, and you hear the stuff in the kitchen, you see stuff falling off, did you think it was a cat?
I thought it was gonna be like a Paranormal Activity moment.
She's like, wait, I was like, this is a ghost movie.
Yeah, I legit was like, oh, they have a cat. Like, that was my first thought. And then they showed like the
switcheroo,
right? The creature's actually just some radiant cats or something.
This is a spooky cat movie, yeah. That's Courtney's
I'm here for that.
Life. Yeah.
Oh, yes. 100%.
Yeah. So Frank is at work when he gets a call from the police about his mother-in-law's death. The cop is asking him if anyone would have motive, like, to kill her. But he's like, I don't know, man. I just want to get my kid and get out of here. Pretty much. Cops doing cop things. So Frank takes Candace home and asks her if she saw anything that happened with Grandma, and she doesn't really respond. She's very like withdrawn. And then Nola tries to call home, but she isn't allowed to do it, so the phone is hung up. And in comes Daddy to try to help Nola, and she confides in him that Frank probably hates her because he thinks that she is hitting their daughter. And then she gets all upset because she says that Daddy should have protected her when her mother abused her, but he ignored it all. So we're kind of getting a big old trauma dump right here, and it's pretty heavy for sure. So Frank and Candace meet Nola's dad, who left when she was young, and they meet him at an airport, who's in town for Grandma's funeral. And then Frank visits this one dude, the dude in the fucking tracksuit. It's pretty dope. It's like a cream colored tracksuit, Adidas. I'd rep it, dude, for sure.
Yeah, you should get one of those.
Yeah, I might dress up as him for Halloween.
I was gonna say that too.
With like the fucked up comb over, love it. But yeah, this dude, I didn't write his name down, but he used to receive therapy from Dr. Ragland, and he's now suing him because he feels like he kind of essentially made him even worse off. And he thinks that his techniques are not great. And that's kind of like, Matt, that's almost like possibly kind of what you were bringing up too in the beginning, was like, is like, what was the point of having patients, that's the word, dude. What was like almost the point, if like, I just don't know what Dr. Ragland's like end point was, like what his goal was.
Well, like with the movie starting, he was using that fella as like a, like you were saying, that live performance thing in front of a group of people, and I'm like, is this part of the therapy to like, I don't know, man. Like, were the patients there before the wife? I have too many logical questions for a Cronenberg movie, I think is my problem. Like,
yeah, dude, I know, right? Same. I try to just accept it for what it is most of the time. I mean, like next week, Courtney, we're covering another, you haven't seen it either, another very strange Cronenberg movie. So Barton, Nola's father figure, he goes to the facility to tell Nola about her mother's passing, but Ragland doesn't allow that to happen. Which it does kind of like offer up the discussion of, if someone is in like therapy, like, or not even therapy, but more so like a mental facility to assist them through like an episode, as we'll put it. Receiving news like this would be very detrimental to that service. So it is kind of a valid thing. I think that Dr. Ragland is trying to protect her. It's complicated. You know, there's a lot of like gray area with that.
Mm-hmm.
So after Candace invites her teacher to their house for dinner, Frank gets a call from Barton, who is drunk and upset. He wants to go back up to the facility and, I don't know, like break her out of it or something. He wants to take Nola. And he wants Frank to go with him, too. So Frank leaves the teacher to babysit while he goes to help out Barton. And while Barton is at his ex-wife's house, walking around drunk, he stumbles upon the spot where Grams was murdered. Pretty fucked up. But yeah, so Barton goes upstairs and sort of like passes out on the bed because he's so drunk, when all of a sudden one of the killer children things comes out from under the bed and grabs those weird like crystal ball things that white people have as decoration. I don't know. I didn't have any, but I feel like a lot of white people do.
That white people.
They do, dude. You know,
you're right. Yes. Yeah. Or it's snow globe.
It was like a crystal ball that you just like set on a table and it has those
useless. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, what are we doing? I don't know. But the creature just takes two of them and smashes Barton's head in yet again. It's a lot of head trauma in this movie. And then the kid attacks Frank as soon as he spots Barton's body and runs out of the room, and it attacks Frank in the bathroom now. But Frank, I was writing notes, so maybe you guys caught it, but like Frank essentially gets the upper hand on it, and he throws it on the ground, and then it like just kind of starts dying. I think it like ran out of gas is what the coroner says later.
I was so confused when it just like gave up the fight. I was like, are these things like super strong? And then all of a sudden it just kind of laid down and died. And I was like, but yeah, until the corner starts like laying stuff out. He's like, you notice anything?
And how crazy it is it in a Cronenberg film that this dude now performs an autopsy on this creature and we get all the information fed to us as the viewer. Like, it's so crazy. He's just like, yeah, no belly button. This thing runs on gasoline, basically, like fucking E85.
He said it was like in a shoulder blade or something, right? It's like, it's up.
Yeah. Like a gas sack or something, dude.
Yeah.
Wild, dude.
I've been called a time or two.
Gas sack.
He's like, that's what they called me in high school.
So while still at the house watching Candace, the teacher picks up a phone call and it's Nola. She accuses her of sleeping with her husband and claims that she is ruining her family. So, you know, classic stuff. I mean, Courtney, if you were the teacher, dude, like, or like, what would you guys do? I would just be like, why the fuck am I here? And her response to the situation is killer, dude.
Outlandish.
She just goes, y'all are too messy right for me, dude. I gotta go.
You know what? He probably super appreciated that, though. He's like, you know what? Like, straightforward honesty.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. He's like, this is a good foundation of a relationship.
He's like, I just got burned really bad, but this is good. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, we do get the scene where Frank is, for whatever fucking reason, at the coroner's office with the cop. I don't know why he's involved in this part of it, but hey. And yeah, the dude is saying that the creature, it ain't human and all this stuff. It doesn't have a belly button or anything like that. So they know that it was never essentially born too, at least not in the way that we are or whatever. So
yeah, it was spawned. Yeah, but I was spawned as well, but yeah, in a different way, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. Hell spawn. Hell yeah. So back at the house, Frank gets home and the teacher's like, yeah, I can't do this shit with your messy ass life right now. Sorry. So she's out of 10,000. Frank tells Candace that the creature is dead and that everything will be okay. Does that ever work out? No. So Raglan tells Nola that she and Frank can divorce and that they can then marry. And she's just like all pissed off about everything. Then Raglan tells his little assistant dude to get everyone out of the house. Everyone except for Nola, of course. And then Frank visits that same hospital where that one previous patient, me, was at, and visits another one of them. And it's the dude that was in the beginning calling Dr. Raglan daddy and stuff. He tells Frank that Nola is the only person that Raglan wants, and he really wants Frank to be his daddy now because no one else will do it. Will you be my daddy, Matt? Will you be my daddy, Maddie?
that chuckle was a yes.
Yeah.
I heard.
He knows it's a yes. He didn't have to ask.
He doesn't even have to ask.
So Frank takes Candace to school. In the classroom, in comes two of these little abominations, and they pick up toy hammers and beat the teacher to death now. Fuck yeah. And kind of like we alluded to right in the beginning, how fucking wild is it that they did this in front of like a bunch of literal children on a set? They were like, we're going to introduce these children to death pretty early. So wild, dude.
At least their parents got a paycheck, though.
Dude, for right? sure. They're like, your trauma is worth my pocketbook.
Yep. Oh, yeah. They're like, we want to go on vacation.
Yeah, we're going to Hawaii.
And you're staying home.
Yeah, they didn't even take the.
So yeah, a kid runs out and tells Frank about what happened, which I'm not sure why he's still there anyway, because it's been like 5 minutes, I feel like, but he's still there. Frank rushes in and sees her dead body and all the students are crying. And also Candace is now missing. Raglan talks to Nola about the teacher and she's like, I just don't feel threatened by her anymore. So now back at the house, Frank runs into that one patient dude from the beginning. Where he tells Frank about the disturbed kids in the work shed. So now Frank is like, what's up, dude? So Frank decides to go to the facility to see for himself. Frank attacks Raglan and tells him that he wants his daughter back. Raglan tells Frank that the children are her real children and that they are children who were born out of rage and that these creatures do her bidding for her while she's angry. And that's why they killed the people that they did. So Raglan then basically tells him, like, if you go in and tell Nola that you love her, but you have to be serious, then everyone will be able to get out alive. because these kids are obviously very dangerous and Frank wants his daughter back. So worth it. Frank goes inside to talk to Nola finally. He's doing a damn good job convincing her that they're still basically in love and everything. Everything's sunshine and rainbows for sure. You know, just the fucking egg sack on your belly is not a big deal.
He is very attracted to it. So
yeah, that reveal of her like doing the, like that shirt that's split in the middle. I was like, hey, where'd you get that shirt? I was thinking it was the 70s. So like even like Sesame Street had boobs in it in the 70s. So I thought, well, hey, we're about to get that, but we didn't.
Not really. We had a little peek for a second and then they cut and then it went back and no more. Well, so that's okay though.
All women have one of those shirts to reveal our little egg sacks.
Yeah.
To our suitors. True. So,
you know, a couple years in, you got to throw them the egg sack, you know, that whole
thing. Oh, absolutely. When your marriage is going south, you hit them.
Here's my egg sack. You know? Haven't you been curious about what this lump is, sir? So Raglan is upstairs where all the broods are, and he's trying to convince Candace to go with him so that they can both escape. Nola is getting a little bit more pissed off now, you can tell. She also reveals the reveal of the century where, like we just said, she has like an egg sac on the outside of her belly, and then she bites it open to give birth to one of the broods, another one. She starts cleaning the baby with her tongue and all that jazz. She knows that Frank is grossed out by her, so she begins to get really upset. I love it. She's like, you're disgusted by me.
Okay, lady.
Let's calm down. So now Raglan upstairs tells Candace to run to the door because now the broods are getting upset and super pissed off and they begin to attack him. He even manages to shoot a few of them, but he gets overwhelmed pretty quickly. So Raglan is no longer. The body count is, I think we're 4 or 5 deep probably now. Yeah. Nola is telling Frank that she would kill Candace herself before she let Frank take her away. Candace is screaming and stuff while she's being attacked by the brood. She like locked herself in a closet and they're like breaking that shit down. So Frank finally attacks Nola. He strangles her until she finally dies. The brood die alongside Nola as well. And lastly, Frank grabs Candace and puts her in the car to take her home. While driving, Candace is completely withdrawn. The camera pushes in on her arm, which shows 2 small welts, insinuating like mother, like daughter.
Boom, boom, boom.
This is a good for her film, right, Courtney?
Oh, absolutely. Classic. My favorite genre.
Mm-hmm. A true classic, dude. You know, this is kind of like the end of the discussion, Matt. So I feel like if you got any more questions, man, now's the time to bring it up because I don't know.
Oh, every question for Cronenberg. I did think, like, I was wondering the whole time, are these creatures like super strong because they're able to kill a teacher with some plastic hammers? Like,
yeah.
A, I mean, I know the toys were like definitely lead based in the 70s, so like I get it, but like they had to like really be wailing on. You know, I'm just thinking like no one's fighting back, which is every horror movie ever. Like you run through the woods, you trip, you fall, you die.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's also like a bit of shock that all of a sudden, like for the teacher, for instance, like all of a sudden, hey, these 2 low key ugly as fuck children are beating me to death with toy hammers. Like, dude,
put it lightly.
Yeah, to put it very.
The rest of the kids in the class weren't like any better, to be honest with you. And that's just my
kids in general, right? Yeah. So. Yeah, it's a good question, man. I don't know. We'll just Cronenberg, period. That's the sentence, right?
Yeah, the answer is just Cronenberg, yeah.
Yeah, it's always, that's the answer to everything. It's not 42, it's Cronenberg.
Yeah, exactly. Well, now, I forgot about the girl's arm at the end. Like, I'm surprised we haven't gotten a second one yet. Like, the brooder, or the brutist would be.
The brutist? Oh shit, dude. Oliver Reed's back. He's like, what's up? No, if anything, Matt, they cast what's his fucking face from No Country for Old Men.
Yeah, I'm telling you, he looks like him. Like I already forgot his name.
I Javier Bardem. Yeah.
They can't get him, so they're just gonna get Del Toro instead.
For no reason. It's just him. And he's the daddy now for sure. He's the Del daddy. You got anything else to add, Courtney?
I don't think so. I think we covered it all, gents.
That seems so weird.
No, it feels wrong. I don't know.
Feels a little off, yeah. Feels a little off, dude, yeah.
I'm just glad I was here for it.
Yeah, dude.
Yeah, you experienced an absolute phenomenon today.
Yeah, you really did. Marking the history of the podcast, yes.
I know.
Crazy shit. All right, well, next section, last section, of course. Let's get us into the cause of tiny hammer death. Let's see. I mean, we'll start with the guest first. Tiny little
globe death.
Yeah, dude, those fucking crystal balls that white people have. Yeah, whatever that is. Shit, dude. I mean, like, I don't think I was that white. I don't think I had any growing up. Matt, you're pretty white too, man. What about you? Do you have any growing up?
I am not that white. But yeah, I'm pretty sure my aunts or something did. I remember them. I think they were snow globes, and they were like from like Branson or something, you know.
I don't know what Branson is. You mean the place, the town?
Yeah, the glorious town of Branson, Missouri, man. If you've never been,
I've never been. I've heard great, delightful things. I'm not judging.
Oh, yeah, it's a hillbilly good time.
I love that. Sweet. Well, let's start with the guest, Matt. Out of 5 toe tags we rated around here, what are you gonna give the brood?
Ooh, Cronenberg automatically is a pretty high rating.
Yeah.
I'm gonna be generous. Can I go into decimal form here? Because I don't feel like a solid number is gonna do it. I'm gonna give it like a 4.6.
Wow. Because I'd like. All right.
Because I didn't see a lot of stuff coming. Like I went into it kind of blind.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, dead zone. That's my feel for Cronenberg. And then. Like there was some points in the movie, I'm like, oh God, like whenever she starts licking that thing, I was like, oh, you know, like,
yeah.
So solid 4.6 every day of the week.
Love it, dude. I love to hear that, dude. That's super dope. And then since I chose it, I'll do my rating and then we went with Courtney. I don't know. I just did that accent. So,
it was good.
Yeah. It was pretty classic Shakespearean stuff. So I think this isn't a perfect film, and man, it's hard. I don't really have reasoning, but for some reason, and after the second viewing, this is my second viewing, the other one was a couple years ago or last year, whatever, I'm gonna go with just a flat 4 out of 5. Matt, don't take that as anything weird. People know around here that's pretty high for me still. I'm a hard audience. No, I'm just kidding, I'm not, but I think I think there are better, you know, like of Cronenberg. Like The Fly is like definitely 4.5 out of 5. Not perfect, sorry, not for me. But yeah, there's other ones too that we'll discuss later this month. And it's a solid film, dude. I think ultimately, like I was saying before we hit record, like I think it's acted super well. It's written incredibly well. Like it, you feel that drama. You really do. Like you feel the hurt from Frank. And obviously Nola is going through something big and disruptive in her life. And you feel for her and you feel like sympathy. I personally do. I feel sympathy for her. Like I don't picture her as this like ghastly creature at the end. I feel sorry for her. Like that to me, if anything, it feels like she's been left abandoned. She had a terrible upbringing. Her husband doesn't love her anymore. And now she's being fucking used by a shitty doctor essentially. So. Yeah, I feel sympathy and overall, yeah, just 4 out of 5, dude. Solid shit. So Courtney, let's hear it. She's like, like it.
I wouldn't even go there, actually. I think I'm going to go 0.9. No, I'm actually going to go for a 4.0 as well. Sick, okay. I'm not just saying that. That was already in my brain.
Yeah, yeah. People, I trust you.
Sick and tired of probably hearing us having the same.
Generally the same rating, yeah.
Yes, ratings on movies, but yeah, for the same thing that you said, like, of course, not a perfect film, but for what it is an amazing film. Definitely unique, shocking there with the egg sack.
Yeah.
Because at first, you know, I was like, 3.5. Egg sack popped up, 4.
Boom, that's how it works, huh? Yeah, because like before that, everything prior, you're like, I mean, these like children are creepy and they're weird and there's been some death. But there's not anything huge. And then there's this dope-ass reveal. And, like, the run-up to it, where, like, Dr. Raglan is, like, saying, like, hey, this is what's happening, and you need to kind of help and fix this to get your daughter to safety. You're like, what's going on? And then, yeah, you see the egg sack, and you're like, whoa.
Yep, and it finally, it helped me accept my egg sack for what it is as well.
Exactly.
Like just seeing it in film.
Exactly.
Makes me feel not so alone. So.
Yeah. You've embraced your outer beauty.
Oh yeah. I sure have.
Exactly, dude. So sick, dude. Yeah. Across the board, super high rated around here. Love to hear it. I'm stoked on your rating, Matt. So like, I forgot to ask you this in the beginning, dude. And actually, I don't know if I super know every little like detail about you with when it comes to this. Like, can you give us either like quickly, like maybe your top three, top five, like some of your all time favorite horror films that are like, I'm saying like 5 out of 5.
Oh, dude, if you have every Jaws, day of the week.
Yeah.
The Shining. But I know you and I got on the thing of Kubrick and how I forgive you for that. It's okay for not being a big Kubrick fan. But yeah, Shining, Jaws, 5 out of 5. I'm trying to like, I don't want to ride the Stephen King train, but I'm such a huge fan. So I'm going to go like Shawshank. Not technically a horror.
No, you're good. What about Godzilla? I mean, any of those?
I mean, truthfully, like the 98 one with Matthew Broderick is so close to my heart. My third grade teacher's nephew worked on that movie. So like he showed us the credits when I was like in third grade. That basically like kind of jump started the Godzilla love, even though I've been watching him with my dad since I was a kid. But I mean, the 54. Yeah. I feel like there's some things you just like the original King Kong, like that's a 10 out of 5, you know, like. Up there with Creature and Invisible Man and, you know, Evan Costello meet Frankenstein.
Yeah. Okay. Sick, dude. Yeah. I mean, I definitely know your taste, but, and when I think of you, I mostly think of Godzilla actually, cause you like to talk about Godzilla with me. so yeah, no, that's sick, dude. I'm stoked to hear that this is up there in the pantheon of really awesome movies to you. So that's good. All right, guys, that was The Brood from 1979, directed by Sir David Cronenberg. What am I doing, Courtney? Jesus Christ, I should have been doing that from the beginning. Sir David Cronenberg, of course.
That's what he deserves.
Yeah, dude, Sir David Cronenberg. So next week, we're pulling your pick out of the body bag, which, like we kind of alluded to and you talked about, you're a little new to him, so I helped guide thy hand.
Thank you.
In the general direction of a decent pick. Dude, reveal what you were going to pick, and maybe the few listeners who will understand will be like,
What was it? What is it called? Hold
Rabid.
On.
Rabid.
Yeah, but there was also another one. Like,
was it? Oh, his Shocker.
David Cronin. No. Let me see.
I thought it was Shocker.
No, I don't think so. Let me see.
Yeah, the one where it's the apartment. Escape. What's that one called? Is it not Shocker?
I was gonna do
what the fuck is that movie called? Now I'm pissed
Shivers.
Off. Shivers, not Shocker. Whatever. Jesus Christ. So yeah, you were gonna do that.
There's no or Scanners.
Scanners isn't one of the options I said, like, could be on the table if you want. It's super iconic, but I don't know if we're gonna do that this month. Maybe
so there's Rabid, there's Shivers. Not nah, maybe. We can do
is that
whatever
the third
the
week
fuck
choice
we want.
It's do I have to podcast. Cut all this?
There's no rules. We could do all of them. Honestly.
No rules.
We could
I know what you picked. You said we're gonna do something different. I know what you picked. So what are you picking though? You're picking. Did you forget?
Yeah.
Videodrome.
yeah, that's what it is. I was kidding. I knew that the whole time.
She got
Videodrome.
Yeah, Videodrome actually. Next week. A very strange classic and. Unfortunately, it does have James Wood in it, and he's a kind of garbage human. Well, I'm not going to talk about that, but he's
why
not.
Is there always a piece of shit? It's only an hour and 27 minutes, though.
That's dope.
That's good.
I got that Criterion. I got the bonus features. Yeah. Hell yes, dude. Hell yeah. So, yeah, look forward to that Videodrome, whatever year that is. Definitely 80s. I think it came after this. I'm pretty sure. I could be wrong, but look forward to that. And Matt, thanks dude for hopping on. Welcome
yes,
to come back
you.
Anytime, obviously.
Oh yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, dude. I mean it's a little worrisome that you do live in a field. Are you okay out there? Because
I'm on top of a mountain. I'm not in a field.
You're in a valley, man. You're in a straight valley. No, but yeah, thanks for coming on, dude. And it was a good time. And next time, if we ever in the future, like definitely do like Godzilla month or Kaiju month or something, I know who to go. Dude, yeah, I know who to go to for sure. So, yeah, if you guys want to catch us online, you can find me on Instagram and Letterboxd at Jensen Harper. You can find Courtney on Instagram only at Little Sky Dancer. Matt, plug away too, dude. I forgot to like allow you to plug your music and stuff. Talk about it, man.
Oh man. Yeah. Album comes out next Monday, September 11th. That wasn't my idea. That was the record label guy's idea. He thought it'd be funny. it's called My First Love Was a Dragon. Yeah, it'll be on Spotify. It'll be on iTunes. It'll be on all the streaming services and stuff. Give her a listen if you like sci-fi or goofy stuff.
What should the people listen? I mean, look up. Like, what's your artist name?
MFTB, the letters.
MFTB, yes. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, check it out. It's good, some good stuff for sure. And pumped on the release, dude. Stoked for you. So, I think this episode your album will just have just dropped by the time this episode comes out. So, okay. Go listen to it on Spotify, please. Yes. Sure. Do you have anything else to plug, dude? You want to plug your Instagram or anything?
Nah, I'm not a. Nah.
You're like, I got like three pictures on there, man.
Yeah, pretty much.
All right. Well, yeah, just look up his music, guys. It's awesome. So, and then if you want to find the podcast online, you can find us on Instagram at The Fright Crew. Court, what should the listener do for us?
Well, listeners should give Court and Jens a rating and review, preferably 5 stars. Anything lower than that, then honestly, we probably wouldn't do anything because we're not that confrontational. Our feelings would be hurt. But if you do give us a positive rating and review, I will give you my firstborn spawn out of my egg sac. I'll even lick it clean for you. Won't even give it to them dirty. Well, it'll be squeaky clean.
Squeaky clean, dude. She's got soap on her tongue, baby.
Oh, yep.
Oh, man. And yeah, if I were to say anything, stay smacking people in the head with crystal balls. Thanks very much. And I love you. Bye.
Okay, bye.
Matt's like, I'm not going to say bye. Fuck him.
Yeah, he's like,
I didn't know if I was supposed to. I'm not a host.
He's like, I hate this podcast.